So while we're waiting on the electrophoresis gels, I just want to explain the rationale of this experiment so you understand a little better why you're doing this stuff. First of all, on this first slide, we're talking about experimental controls, and controls within experiments are useful for a couple different reasons. For one thing, a control will allow you to compare other results to that control to see whether there is some sort of effect for whatever you're testing. But controls are also important to tell you whether or not something went wrong in the experiment. And that's really what we're using two of the things we used in this experiment today for. So you have to think back to what you did last week. You used oatmeal that you ground up, and that was guaranteed to not be genetically modified. So that's serving as a negative control. In other words, it is guaranteed to give you negative results, and therefore if it doesn't give you negative results, something went wrong. And then the one that you didn't actually grind, but that was just given to you as a little tube, which was the GMO plus, that's DNA that's guaranteed to be genetically modified. So it's a positive control, meaning that if it doesn't give a positive result, which it better, then something went wrong as well. In other words, you don't just use the food you're testing for and look at those results. You compare them to these controls to make sure that you can trust the results. Slide 2 is a flow chart that shows you really what we've been doing here. So you ground up your food just so that you could burst the cells open and release the DNA. And we're using only plant-based foods because that's the only thing that this kit that we're using tests for. And like I said before, we need enough DNA so that you can have a distinct band that is visible in your electrophoresis gel. It won't be visible until we look at it under UV light. But you want enough DNA in there so that you can actually see the band, which is why you didn't just put that sample into the wells. You prepared those samples for PCR, which drastically multiplies how much DNA you have, and therefore you do have enough, hopefully, to make a nice distinct band in your electrophoresis. All right, so it leads to two questions, basically. Did you extract DNA from your plant is one question. And that's basically a question that you ask yourself to make sure everything went okay. Because if you didn't extract any DNA from your plant, you certainly can't say whether or not the DNA is genetically modified, right? If you didn't get any DNA, you can't trust your results at all. So you're asking this question as a control, in a sense. The other question, though, is the one you really care about, and that question is the DNA genetically modified? So on the first question, is plant DNA viable? That means, did you get DNA from the plant? If that answer is no, basically the whole study is worthless, so you'd have to start over. But if it's yes, then you go on to the second question and ask, is the DNA that you isolated from the plant genetically modified? And there's no correct answer there. It just tells you whether or not your food is genetically modified, which is the whole reason for doing this test. So depending on which food you used that we gave you, the answer might be yes or no. All right, now let me explain what was in the mixtures that you used. Slide 3, primers and dyes. If you think back to how PCR works, remember that PCR basically mimics the natural process of DNA replication that happens in cells. But PCR, there's no cells involved. You're just working with molecules in solution. And remember that PCR happens in cycles, and every cycle has three steps to it, right? What are those three steps? No, those are the steps of DNA replication.
Oh, does it start with Mendelian?
Right. What's the first step, though, in PCR?
Denaturation.
And in a cell, that refers to breaking the two strands apart, right? In a cell, that happens with an enzyme. But in the PCR thermal cycler, how does that happen? What do we do? Right. We heat it up so that they come apart. The hydrogen bonds break. The second step is annealing, like you said. And here's where the primers come into play. Remember that you have to know what you're looking for when you do PCR. In other words, you have to design the PCR experiment so that you have primers, which are tiny little pieces of DNA, that look for corresponding or complementary sequences of DNA in your sample. All right? And the two primers define the two ends of the fragment that you're going to make big, you're going to make many, many copies of. So this is where the two questions in the flowchart come into play. The first question was, do you have plant DNA? Therefore, the green solution has primers in it that look for something that only plants have. Look for DNA that only plants have. All right? And the DNA that it looks for is a gene that codes for what is called a photosystem. A photosystem is a large complex of protein that is in the little chloroplasts that are the things that make plants green. The photosystems are the things that absorb the light and allow plants to undergo photosynthesis. So we don't have that gene at all because we don't make that protein. We don't make photosystems. We're not photosynthetic. Only plants do. And therefore, that's the perfect thing to look for if you want to answer the question of whether or not you actually got plant DNA out of your sample. So that's what the two primers types that are in the green solution do. They look for the beginning and ending of a sequence of DNA that's in a photosystem gene. If they don't find it, then there won't be any multiplication of DNA in the PCR, and therefore the answer to that first question will be no, you didn't get any DNA out of your food, therefore you can't trust the results. In the red solution, the two primers look for they look for two different things. They look for the CAMV35S promoter, and they look for the NOS terminator. Remember that those are the two things that no plant should naturally have. That promoter, which comes from a virus, and that terminator, which comes from a bacterium, are what we stick on to the beginning and to the end of a gene that we're going to insert into the plant if we genetically modify it. Therefore, if it's a natural plant, it will not have either of those things in it, in its DNA. If it's a genetically modified plant, though, chances are very good that it will have those. You can't drink in here. So the red primers are little pieces of DNA that look for that genetically modified DNA. All right, those are the red and green mixtures. And that's why you used one green mixture and one red mixture for each of your three samples, oatmeal, your test food, and the GMO Plus. And that's why you had six overall tubes. So each of the three different types of samples, you're asking two questions by treating it with the two different colors. You're asking, is there plant DNA in this sample? And is there genetically modified DNA in this sample with red and green respectively? I mean, with green and red respectively. Okay. I've already said this, slide 4, so I'm not going to repeat it. Let's go to control for contamination. Slide 5. Contamination is a easy problem to occur in an experiment like this, which is why you wear gloves and which is why you use clean materials. Remember, though, that I told you to grind your oatmeal first before you grind your test food. And that's because, as we already talked about, Your oatmeal is guaranteed not to be genetically modified. Therefore, if you grind it first and then your sample food, if your sample food happens to not be genetically modified, then you're not in any danger of contaminating it from the oatmeal, because the oatmeal is also not genetically modified. On the other hand, if you grind your test food first and it is genetically modified, then you might contaminate the oatmeal. So that's why you do it. But you also want to really wash that mortar out well so that there's not contamination anyway. Well, this brings up the notion, though, of false positives and false negatives, which you can have in all kinds of different tests, like a pregnancy test, for instance, right? A false positive in a pregnancy test indicates pregnancy when actually you're not pregnant. Well, a false positive here in this test would be a result that says you have genetically modified food here when it actually isn't genetically modified. And that can occur if you were to contaminate your test food sample with the GMO plus sample, right? Because GMO plus is definitely genetically modified. If you accidentally get that DNA into your test food, then the test is going to give you the results that indicate your test food is genetically modified when it actually isn't. On the other hand, and also, of course, if the test tells you that the oatmeal is genetically modified, that's clearly a false positive, right? If you get a false positive on your test food, you can't really tell that it's a false positive or a true positive, which is why you have the control as well. If you have the oatmeal as a control and that tests positive for genetic modification, then you know something's wrong, because the oatmeal definitely is not genetically modified. It means it's showing a positive because of contamination. On the other hand, you can have a false negative as well. A false negative would be the test is indicating that there is not genetically modified DNA there. Your food is not genetically modified, when actually it is. And that can happen as well. For instance, that could happen if you just didn't get any DNA out of your food, right? If you didn't get any DNA out of your food, there's going to be no DNA for the PCR machine, the thermal cycler, to multiply. And therefore, there's going to be nothing in your gel to show you that it's genetically modified. So even though the food is genetically modified, you would think that it's not if you didn't successfully take any DNA out of it. And that's why you use the green primers, right? On your test food, let's just imagine that you have a food that is not genetically modified. The green solution should give you a nice band in that lane saying, yes, you did get DNA out of the food. This is plant DNA. But then you shouldn't get a band for that test food in the red lane, right? Because the red lane tests for genetic modification. Well, if you don't get a band in the green lane, something definitely went wrong. That means you didn't get any DNA out of the food, and therefore you can't trust the red lane, whether it's there or not. Okay. Slide 7, a nearly universal test. This is not a completely universal test, meaning that even if nothing at all goes wrong, no contamination, you definitely get DNA from all three samples, nothing goes wrong as far as protocol is concerned, it's still possible for you to get a false negative. In other words, it's still possible for the test to say that your food that you're interested in is not genetically modified when actually it is. And the reason for that is that, remember I said that what the red primers are checking for are that specific promoter and that specific terminator. The reason it looks for those two things, that promoter and that terminator, is because most of the foods that are genetically modified in the United States nowadays use either that CAMV35S promoter or that NOS terminator, or both. And we're looking for both. So if it has either one, it will show a positive result. But that's true for only about 85% of the GM foods that are produced. There are some foods that are still genetically modified, but we stick on a different promoter and a different terminator. And therefore, this test won't find those, because it's looking for that specific promoter, that specific terminator. And if you happen to have food that is genetically modified, but it's one of those 15%, then this is going to give you a false negative, sorry, even if nothing went wrong. So you can't trust it for sure, but if you get a positive and there aren't any problems with contamination based on the other controls, then you can trust it. In other words, if it gives you a positive for your sample food and nothing else went wrong, then yes, your food is genetically modified. Well, this slide 8 shows you this in pictures. So these lung-looking things at the top, I think, are tortilla chips, as an example of food that you're testing. You grind that up to get the DNA out. This is the DNA from each sample. Now notice the one on the left is non-genetically modified. This one's genetically modified. So in this sample, this one's using only two samples, not three. But in this sample, which is non-GM, you divide that into two samples so that you can treat it with red stuff and green stuff. All right? The green stuff uses plant primers. So that's looking for DNA that only a plant will have. If it's not there, it won't bind to it, and therefore nothing will happen. But if it is there, then it will bind to it, and you'll make many, many copies of this fragment, which is what these are. And these are about 455 base pairs big. So in other words, 455 nucleotides long. Okay? The red one on that same sample of DNA is going to look for genetic modification, either the 35S promoter or the NOS terminator. Well, this is non-GM food, so it's not going to find those. Natural plants don't have those. So nothing in the PCR machine is going to happen, and therefore you're not going to have any DNA in your gel, right? So for a non-GM food, you have two lanes, green lane and a red lane. You definitely should have a band in the green lane because it definitely is a plant. You definitely should not have a band in the red lane because it's definitely not GM. So these two lanes on this picture show you exactly what your oatmeal two lanes should look like. You should have a band in the green. You should definitely not have one in the red for oatmeal because it's non-GM. In a GM food on the right, you definitely should have a green band, green lane band, because it's, even though it's genetically modified, it's still a plant, so it still has that photosystem DNA. But you should also definitely have a band in the red lane because it found the NOS terminator and the 35S promoter. Okay? So lanes 3 and 4 here are exactly what your GMO plus lanes, which are 5 and 6 for you, should look like. And therefore, the two middle lanes on your run, 3 and 4, those are your test food. And they can be either like 1 and 2, which would tell you that your food is not genetically modified, or they can be like 3 and 4, which means that it is genetically modified. But unless 1 and 2 is just like this, and unless 5 and 6 is just like 3 and 4, then that means something went wrong. So you can't trust your test food results. Does that make sense? And the book gives you side-by-side pictures of the two possibilities. Those two possibilities are both correct in the sense that nothing went wrong. So notice the bands in 1 and 2 and in 5 and 6. They are exactly as they should be based on the expectations. If they're not like that, something went wrong and you can't trust bands or lanes 3 and 4. But really boils down to make sure you have something in 3 because you definitely had a plant, and whether or not you have something in 4 is what determines whether what you had was genetically modified or not. That make sense? That's the show. Now, you remember how to use the transilluminator? There's a separate power switch on the bottom. Remember to turn that on. That turns on the UV.